Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Welcome to another edition of Off Camera, the show where I get to talk to iconic, creative, curious artists and find out how they got that way. In this episode, I sit down with actress Catherine Hahn. I didn't know Catherine Hahn personally before she came to the studio, but within 5 minutes of meeting her, I felt like I was having a fun conversation with a friend I'd known forever. Hollywood's known Catherine since 2001, when she got a part on Crossing Jordan, but it hasn't always known what to do with her. She's outrageously funny, though she doesn't consider herself a comic actress. She says she was so eager to be invited to the party that she was game for any role she was offered. Until 2013, that was mostly scene-stealing supporting roles in Anchorman and Step Brothers. Then she got her first lead role in the film Afternoon Delight, and we saw what we'd been missing. An artist who can inhabit characters with humor, but also with rare nuance and honesty. For proof, you don't need to look much further than her work as Rabbi Raquel Fine in the acclaimed series Transparent. Catherine talks about the freedom and the terror of working with improv greats for the first time, what Hollywood could learn from Yale Drama School, and why having a stalker can be a good thing. So pull up a chair and listen in. Hi, Catherine.
Sam, hello.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you for having me.
The first guest we've had that brings two mugs. Mm-hmm. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm. I just close my eyes and I don't know what I'm going to get. Not sure what it is.
That's right.
Is it the vodka?
It's the vodka.
Or the gin.
Exactly. Either way, you're a winner.
Right? I feel like it. Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you know, I think you're one of the funniest people on film or television, and yet I don't think of you as a comedian. But I feel like you're this person that whatever you do that's funny, it seems to come from honesty, and it seems to come from a place that is so real and believable.
It's interesting because I certainly don't think of myself as a comedian. And so whenever I see that, like, kind of, like, comedian Catherine, whenever I see that together, it's always like, because I would never define myself that way because I know too many incredible, brilliant people that deserve that title and have studied their whole lives. I mean, I never was in a sketch group. I never, like, did any improv classes. I never, like, just because I think what you said is true. Like, I don't feel like it always comes I think it all has to come from the same center.
Right.
Myself. And so, like, there's certainly, like, I love an awesome big swing comedy, and I love making those big choices as much as, like, the small stuff. But I feel like if it's not rooted, then it starts to feel, like, sweaty and not good.
Well, the first thing I think I really took notice of you in was Step Brothers. And we could do the whole hour on that movie, because I rewatched it last night and this morning. So obviously that's an absurd over-the-top movie and an absurd over-the-top part. And in the wrong hands, that film and that part could have been... We have all seen the Saturday Night Live sketch where someone really went hard at something and it just was not funny because it was too desperate or it was too... You know what I mean? And so I just wonder, when you got that role and you started to think about, what am I going to do, is that a perfect example of you just have to commit to a direction and hope it's the right thing?
The audition for Step Brothers,
like, what did the script say?
I just wanted it so badly. I mean, definitely, like, it was like I can't even remember, like, how much we had improvised and how much, especially in that, like, meeting of the, like, the bathroom scene. So much of it was, I mean, most of that was improvised. I just remember the audition process was just McKay, the amazing Allison Jones, who's his casting director, and John C. Reilly and myself. And I just remember it was very important for me to have, like, a purse on the entire time. That I was, like, for some reason that was, like, it just grounded me and, like, in her. And the improv went on for way too long, and it was so uncomfortable.
In the audition?
Yes, it was awesome. It just went into the weirdest, like, I think we had planned, like, we were going to run away somewhere. Like, I had, like, a whole, like, murder scenario of, like, how to murder Derek, played by Adam Scott. Like, right. We had this whole, like, went really deep into this Thelma and Louise type journey, the two of us, like, within just that kiss at the door. So crazy. It just, you feel, it's crazy. Like, it's going down the rabbit hole, that kind of bat world, which yeah. I love. Like, you just have to, you know, I was taught as an actor, you have your, it's all about your given circumstances. Like, you read the script and you're like, the who am I? It's all right there in the script. That's all you need. It's like the who am I, what do I want, what am I getting, what I want, like, where did I come from, what did I do yesterday, and all that little fun homework stuff.
Right.
And with this, you, with that kind of world, you really have to, like, let yourself disobey that, like, world order, I guess. Like, you just kind of have to, like, crack it open.
Yeah.
And just, like, not behave, which I also love.
Well,
love
I would
feeling.
Think... I would think that, you know, you would have to hold both, right? Because
yeah.
I think that if it was just like, oh, do anything.
No, right. Then it's just chaos. But you're right. It's because the given circumstances are so rooted, because you know, like, I can't improvise from nothing. I'm not an improviser. Like, I couldn't go on. Like, I'm not like, you know, some of my friends who are the most amazing improvisers that have ever existed, like Polar, like all the, they who can just make something out of nothing. I do not feel confident in that. It has to be rooted in something tangible. Like, I think what you're saying is, like, I have to be very rooted in the who am I? Like,
yeah.
Who am I?
And that's your homework, right?
That's your homework, yeah. And then through that is where you can start to, like, punch holes in that, but only if it's so anchored, I think, or else it just becomes a waste of people's time.
Well, what do you do if you're around these? I mean, because clearly McKay and Will are improvisers, and
yeah.
So how do you be in that world and it all starts happening quickly, and does it feel like keeping up, or does it feel like...
It's such a security blanket knowing who you're playing, like, just knowing who you are is, like, right. It's such a security blanket. And also, they know, you know, we're not doing an improv show together, like, it's, you know, it's different. So they are rooted in who they are.
Right,
so,
right.
So it's not like it all feels... But it's so interesting, even if it's, like, a different genre, Sam, like, even if it is something, like, quieter and more, like, just, like, smaller, it's the same principles. Like, if it's not rooted, maybe this is bullshit, but, like, I feel like if it's not anchored, any of it, in the truth of who you are, then it's not really helpful. But sometimes when you're in a scene with somebody, sometimes the improv can start to happen and you're like, oh, this is not going anywhere. And it will never be used, but that is still, like, incredibly valuable for just, like, giving a history that you can't, or, like, a texture. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, like you needed to go through that to
yeah.
get to something real, or you yeah. needed to try
or just this. Like, feel, honestly, just, like, closer to the person that you're with. Like,
right.
Just feel like you have, like, sometimes that's, like, a really quick way in. It's just to go down a rabbit hole and come out.
Do you think there was some discovery going on for Adam McKay when you two started doing those scenes and they got built up bigger because he saw something happening?
I mean, I think that that's just how it was for everybody that went through that experience, was that, like, it was like he created a space those were the rules.
Was that intimidating first to be around that? I mean, maybe more so you had that experience on Anchorman, but is it intimidating when you get around people and you're like, oh my God, these people are actually really...
Yes.
Geniuses.
That same summer, I had shot I was in a movie called Revolutionary Road.
Yeah, Sam Mendes,
and that was complete different genre, and that was, like, the dreamiest actor summer I could possibly.
I can imagine.
Yeah, to be able to go from both those worlds, like playing pretend the Revolutionary Road was so beautiful, and the clothes, and the Michael Shannon and Kate, and, like, just, like, the whole experience. And then to come back to LA and go into McKay's world was, like, That was pretty dreamy. And I was nursing the whole way through all of it. I just remember,
oh, you were?
Like, yeah, I had a very young child. He was coming with me. So I watch Revolutionary Road and I can see like pre and post pump. I was like, oh, I must have just run upstairs and quickly pumped out the left boob, because it'd be like
a little bit. You're walking with a limp a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, walking in circles.
It's like a little bit of a Wizard of Oz, Dorothy's braids. If you ever want to go back and look at Revolution Road, see round of Catherine's boobs inflate and deflate.
Well, I mean, think about that for a minute, though. Like
my boobs inflating and deflating.
Think about those. No. But think about the fact that in one summer,
I know,
you did an Adam McKay movie and a Sam Mendes movie,
I know.
How many people can say that?
I know.
Like that they could be considered for both those, in both those worlds. I mean, that right there, I think, is a pretty amazing, you know, pretty amazing deal.
It's interesting because I think back then it was kind of, it just felt like career chaos of like, I just wanted to work. Like, I didn't know where it was going to land. Like, I had all these student loans.
Did you still have student loans that you were paying off up till that point? That's amazing.
Yeah. I put myself through school, so it was like a ton. I went to Yale, which was awesome. But yeah, I think it was like the benefit of not being known really worked in my favor. Like, no one, I still feel like that a lot.
Like, you still feel like you're slipping under the radar?
Yeah.
I did read once that you said the thing that you loved about being at Yale was that it was all about the acting and the performance, and it wasn't about the appearance or who you were or who's casting you and why, and it was just about the work itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that is something that's difficult once you get sort of put in a box for doing one thing well and or being a success, right?
Just about physically what you, all of a sudden you're just like confronted with just like your physical body as being like a limitation to what your creative brain can do.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I was able to be like Grandma Jode, whatever, Polonius. Like, there are all these parts I was able to play.
Right.
That, like,
you're never going to get Polonius.
I mean, I hope so. I really hope my Polonius days, I think, are around the corner for real. But yeah, that was the most fun about school, is that anybody could really be anything. And it's hard to realize, like, oh, right, like, it's just like not totally camera ready all the time. Like, this is just what it, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, this is like, there's some things that I would just like have, you know, of course, like, you're just butting up against just like what your limitation of just that, which I guess is just being a human being too, right?
Right, and the fact that it's a business and mm-hmm. that there's, you know.
Right.
There's multiple choices for every role.
Yes.
And, yeah, I would think school, oftentimes, you're the only Polonius that day. Right?
Ever.
So I would think theater would be an amazing place to learn your craft because you get immediate feedback from an audience.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's different than film, but you get immediate feedback. So you.
Especially comedy-wise, because I'm so blown away by film comedians because it is into the void. Like, you really are, like, you don't really, your response, you don't have that immediate response. And the camera catches everything you're thinking.
I mean, are you fascinated with what the camera can see?
Darling, as the years go by, I am more fascinated with what the camera... No, I never watch playback, which is neither here nor there. I'm not trying to make a statement about it. I just don't like it myself. Uh-huh. A lot of people find it really, really helpful. And for some reason, I just start to worry about those things that we were talking about, you know, that come into play after like your beautiful, pure learning experience of like all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm just paying attention to stuff that's not my business.
Right. And I think that you've had these collaborations with Jill Soloway. Afternoon Delight is a film that I think is incredible and transparent, where it seems like you're getting opportunities to play characters that sort of, they reflect your own life a little bit, too. I mean, I would imagine it's an interesting thing to be playing characters where there is a lot of crossover or parallel things happening to your own life. I mean, I think about Afternoon Delight. Obviously, you're not bringing hookers into your home, I don't think.
Am I?
Are you? I don't know. But I think about that, and I go, okay, woman living in L.A., married, kids, probably dealing with school stuff and that balance. And even in Happy-ish, I think same thing, like dealing with dealing with things that are parallel to you, right? And I was thinking, like, how do you make sure to differentiate it? Like, how do you separate characters enough, but still draw from what's actually going on with you enough to believe it?
That's such an awesome question. I mean, I think it goes back again to, I mean, it's going to sound so, to just like what that script is telling you. And when you're in it, when you're in, I think any actor would say this, like when you're in the fever or the bubble of like that particular job, that particular gig you're working on, unless it's a mess, and I've like gratefully never had that experience where it's like, ah, like no one knows. It feels very, at a certain point, it all just like, and it just feels very specific.
It does.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, I don't know if it looks like that from the outside,
absolutely,
but it does.
It
very much does. Afternoon Delight was a crazy close one for me because, there's so many things that happened with that, I feel like. I had been working on a movie in New York. I Skyped with Jill for it. There's a bunch of other people she was seeing. I had never had to sell myself like on a Skype session. I'm horrible at it. Like I'm really, really bad at like meetings. Like I'm like, oh, she would be great. Like I can't, like I'm not good like selling myself.
So you didn't know Jill before that?
Mm-mm, no.
Oh, amazing. Okay.
She had seen me, I had a very interesting role in a television show called Hung, which was an HBO show. And I played, he is a male prostitute and I play, Thomas Jane was, and I played a very pregnant, like John-ness of his,
yeah,
you would say. I wasn't really, really pregnant in real life. But I would never do that to my unborn child.
Right. Especially not
I was
with
like, look at
a male prostitute.
On camera. It's your baby's first movie. My poor mother was like, Catherine. I was like, it's not. But it was really, it was intense and loud. And I think that she's interested in that. So anyway, back to the Skype session, which it was just like so inarticulate. It's the stuff you want the most. It's like the hardest to get because you're just like, you just don't want them to smell that you want it, but you can't help it. Like you're a human, you're an actor, and you're supposed to be, you're still like, just like, so you're like, I could never be like, it doesn't matter. Because I wanted it so badly. And
are you someone that can't cover up what's really going on in those situations?
Like, I am the worst poker player. I mean, it's a joke. Like even playing Mafia, people are like, I'm not playing with you, Catherine, because I have the poker face. Is a disaster. If somebody knows it, maybe it's because I was brought up Catholic. Like I just feel like
guilty.
I'm getting in trouble all the time.
Really?
I'm always constantly thinking I'm going to get busted.
Really?
Yeah. Not weird. 42. Like I literally, like if I'm driving and I hear a cop car,
it's
like
you.
Somewhere, I'm like, be cool, be cool. Meanwhile, there's two kids in my backseat. Like I'm not doing anything wrong. We're driving to school. And I'm like, everybody should be cool. Just be cool.
Put away the goldfish.
There's nothing going on.
So you have a terrible poker face. You're on Skype, and you're thinking,
oh, this is a disaster. It's never going to happen.
But isn't it funny, the human impulse of if they can see I want it, they won't give it to me?
But it's true.
It kind of is, right?
Because I've only been on the other side of it a few times, and you're like, oh, God. I was like, A, I love actors. B, it's like you just, it's very hard. Like, it's just I just think for some reason it is not, it's, I don't know. It's weird. It's so stupid. I wish I could just be honest and be like, some people can do that too. But then as soon as I'd be like, I am the only one to play this, I'd be like this, I'm not convincing, they don't believe it. I am more like, this is horrible. Like, abort. Like, I can't, and then I would just not do it.
It's a confidence thing, right?
Apparently.
I totally am on the same page with you about that. And I think that I'm in awe of people that can come in, and even if it's a really bad idea, they can be like, no, that's what we're doing, and that's the greatest thing. And even if you have a better idea, you're like, well, I don't know, maybe we should do, but no, you're probably right.
But thank God for those people.
Maybe.
But I do, like, if there's, I just also always feel I could never just in all honestly be like, you have to hire me. This is mine. Because I would start laughing as I was saying it.
And then you name like five other actors you think would be better in
and
the part.
And if it's not me.
If you can't get.
But this was the first one. Because we did the Skype and it was a disaster. In my opinion, I wonder if she would say the same thing. And then I immediately sent her the longest email because I can communicate much better email.
Which doesn't look desperate at all.
No, and not passive aggressive. But the longest email. And then I got it. And I don't know, it was another crazy, amazing summer because I was doing More Than Millers at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was like my John Cassavetes dreams comes to life. It was like just all in one house for 3 weeks, 6 days a week, like used my minivan to shoot those scenes in because we realized day one that we couldn't get a camera in the picture car. And so I was like, you can use my van. And like, so it was just that feeling of like a small crew, small, tight, like I fell so in love with Juno Temple during it. Like we just, it was like a blessed experience top to bottom. And it also became something that we did not, that's also why it was so fun for me, is that the movie became something else as we were doing it. Like it revealed itself to be something else. And because Jill is just like so open to it, it allowed itself to be something that we couldn't have imagined tone-wise. We thought it was going to be much, much funnier.
Well, that's an interesting thing because the premise or the setup, the log line.
Yeah, it's like
you can imagine it's
yeah.
Yeah, and I should say for people who haven't seen it, they should go see it, and it's
most people haven't and they should. It's hilarious.
It's a great
awesome.
Film and you play a mom who's married to a guy that's working all the time at a tech company.
Yeah.
You guys aren't having sex. He takes you with another couple to a strip club to sort of like lube up the
spice
evening
it up.
And you end up somehow taking in.
So graphic.
That's terrible. You know what, let me.
So graphic.
You know, just like grease the wheels.
I know, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. You smelling what I'm stepping
in? I'm smelling what you're, whew.
You picking up when I'm laying down? And instead of coming home and having sex, a couple days later, the woman who gives you a lap dance is now living in your home, and that's where things really start. And you end up having this incredible 2 weeks that changes your marriage and changes your perception of life. And I would think you walk away from a film like that going, that's the work I want to do, and how do I find more of that?
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. We all were, it was, I think everybody that worked on that would say it was one of those life-changing, or at least like work change, you know, it definitely was a creative like explosion for all of us, just in terms of like what you can make with so little. It was very exciting that we could achieve that kind of depth in that short amount of time. Like that was unexpected. It just felt emotionally really safe. Jim Frohna, who is the DP on Afternoon Delight, Transparent, and now the new show. Like he is an incredible director of photography, and he and Jill work very closely. And I would say it's almost like they look through the same eyeballs. Like they just, their gaze is so simpatico. And he also, he's such an empath behind the camera that he makes it feel like it's the safest space. It is like an actor's playground. Because sometimes when you're working, like, you know, you see that camera and you see kind of a stranger behind it and, you know, you see like banks of monitors here and here and here. You know, so many people are watching you.
Yeah.
With like not necessarily like judgment, but just like not, there's no like, not like, there's just no empathy or feeling.
And they're doing their job.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's just what it is. But there is, we realize like, oh, if there is like somebody that is as invested looking through that lens, like what they are going to find is so much richer than if they were closed off to it. Like if the lens doesn't feel like a piece of plexiglass between you, but actually feels like a window, then I just think it's, he'll catch stuff that you just couldn't have possibly ever pre-planned. Like Jill says at the beginning of every day, she's like, you always hear on TV sets, like, they're, you know, we're running out of time, we're running out of light, we're running out of money. And she's like, on this set, we have all the time in the world. You are the light, and we will not run out of money. Which I'm sure Amazon's like, oh, really? But at least she'll say that. But it's just an awesome way to...
She's one of those really confident people.
Oh.
None of those things were true. But she made everyone believe.
But she literally like makes magic. Like it's pretty incredible. We do this thing now, and we just finished season 3, And this cast, I mean, this cast is like out of control crazy. I'm talking about Transparent.
Yeah.
But they do this thing now at the beginning of the day, which sounds like a little douchey, but it's not. And then she has, it's called, it's like a, they put a box out and then someone is tapped of the crew or the cast to stand there and just like say whatever they want, just something to start the day. And it's not like a confessional, it can be like a song or, you know, I'm telling you, it sounds a little bit like douchey. But what happens is, and I was trying to articulate this to someone the other day and I think I finally figured it out, and this is why it's so helpful. A, because I feel like I'm back in school and I like that feeling. B, and B, it's because, like, have you ever heard of those actors that when they do a nude scene, sometimes they're like, I'll do it if these guys do it. And they have, like,
people
naked.
Oh, you mean the whole crew's naked? Yeah. The boom guys
all
of a sudden,
like... Which is like, you know what, I don't need to, but I get to see it, but I get if that makes you feel better, looking at those saggy balls, then all right. But I...
That's what we do here.
Everybody's nude here, which I thought was really welcoming.
Yeah, well... We do our best to make you feel comfortable.
You keep it a little chilly in here.
Yeah, we do.
They...
Nate doesn't like that we keep it chilly.
I don't, I'm sorry to keep referencing your balls, Nate. But
Put your pants on.
But they're adorable. No, I...
They're so soft. This is...
gin and vodka, gin and vodka.
No, so, I am with
but
you.
But this is
okay.
So, anyway, it's like an emotional asking of people to like take their clothes. It's basically saying like I'll get emotionally naked if we're all on the same page. So like having a crew member stand up there and do something that's like embarrassing and like vulnerable, it just gives. It just starts the day in a place that everyone feels like as emotionally like naked and available to start.
Right. Well, I mean, all joking aside, it sounds like it brings the crew so close together.
And they also like turns it to just like in one entity. So it's not like crew cast. It's like we're all making something together. And I know it feels like that shift is palpable, though.
You know,
I don't know if that makes any sense,
it
but it's the first time I felt safe
sense.
In front of it.
It makes total sense. And I think that, I mean, we are in an industry where we're making weird creative art, so we shouldn't act like the rest of the... We shouldn't produce our work the same way an office produces work, right?
Right.
It requires a different path to get there, so let's acknowledge it. And I think that's really cool.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. It's like a tricky, tricky thing because... I think so much of it, like, the blue-collar Ohioan in me is like, do your homework. You know, just show up and do your stuff and stop, like, you know, who cares? Like, it's your business. I don't need to hear anybody's, you know. But then, it, like you said, it is, if you're given this opportunity and this amount of cash is handed to you to produce such and such show, and you have this kind of, like, why wouldn't you... deep dive as far as you possibly could. Like, I don't know. I have done so much mediocre crap, for sure. But it really feels...
Do you think so?
Yes. I would say any actor would feel the same way. Like,
yeah.
It's every actor, if they say, like, oh, I'd love to just, like, just... It's impossible if you want to make a living at it. Like, you just sometimes have to just, like... Or something start out, you think, oh, this is going to be...
Sure.
Amazing, and then it turns out differently. And sometimes something that you think is like, oh, I'm just doing this for this, ends up being like a really creative experience. So you just have to just be open. You just never know.
Yeah.
I used to just be grateful, though. Just like grateful, grateful. And I am terribly grateful. But I also am like, I don't know, not quite a youngin' anymore. I've got two kids. I know when the experience feels good, that's like worth it. If I can like really learn something and just dive deep.
Well, you wrote a thing for a blog or something called What I Learned About Life from My 6-Year-Old Daughter. And I was so taken by this. We printed it out here in the office.
Oh, you did?
I did. And you know, I think what you wrote there, like the idea of what can an adult learn from a kid, especially what can an artist learn from a kid, It's amazing. So I wrote some stuff down here because I want to ask you about a few of them, if you don't mind.
It's so sweet. Yes.
Well, okay. So I thought we could relate some of these things to your career, but
Great. But
you started with don't wear makeup unless it's cat whiskers. Just kind of just doesn't need any explanation. But I read that and I thought, okay, what I hear from that is don't be so beholden to vanity and trying to be youthful that you change your appearance or do something. Is that what that came from?
It's just like, she sees mommy putting makeup on for work. Like, she know it's like a confusing thing to have an actor for a mom, I'm sure, or just heightens like certain things about womanhood in this culture that it's just like heightens.
Right.
So I'm always constantly trying to just like minimize or just like this is like mommy's pretend, like I'm playing pretend because I never wear it in like my real life.
Right.
And I would really hate for her to think that this is anything than just fun. Then it's like to make me, that it's not about making me feel, like it's not about trying to like, that anything is wrong with how I think I look.
Right. Like,
without
like
it.
The
like,
way
I don't
you
want
are.
Her to think it's to be like, oh, mommy needs her eyeliner.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like I can't leave the house without that, you know, there's some things I have to do if I want to continue, you know, to work, but I want to just protect her from that noise as long as possible.
As long as possible, yeah.
So, like, they all are so beautiful, and it's such a weird culture right now, girl-wise, I feel like, just in terms of, like, it's starting so early, that pressure. Even just, like, working on this show has, like, really opened my mind to just, like, what, like, just, like, gender. So it's like, I just don't want this to be like, this is a girl.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
It just really, just also makes me uncomfortable.
Isn't that fascinating, like, that you're on a show that challenges all that stuff.
And
you're also in a business that you could argue, you know, up until very recently, it was very common practice to say, oh, she's aged out of that role.
Yeah. Or,
you know what I mean? And I think that pressure for women is so much bigger and built into the business.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about money, I guess. So it's like who's wants to look at what face the most and pay the most money. And that's like, you know, I that's what, at a certain point you think like, I get where I am. I'm so grateful. I love working. But it's like you either go batshit crazy trying to be something that it's just like never, it's always going to be constantly at. And I don't want to waste the rest of it.
Right.
I just don't want to. I just don't want to do it. And she's like, I look at her and I'm like, this is complicated to have mommy like, I would just want to make sure she stays. And it's like, how powerful would we all be if we could just like hold on to that like sense of self from the beginning?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's really hard too, raising girls especially because there's,
what do we do, Sam?
There's so much pressure. I don't have a good answer for that.
My daughter was like, what is this? About a thong underwear, and I was like, oh yeah, as underwear. She was like, why would you wear it? Like, her idea was like, this has got to be a mistake. Like, why would you do this to yourself? Like, this is horrible. And I was like, I didn't want to be like, well, you know, sometimes a panty line, because I'm like, you're right, it's totally bullshit. Like, who cares?
No, you should have said dad likes it that way.
These are daddies.
Go talk to dad. All right, so you also say in this, demand what you want.
Yes, I've got to listen to that.
Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, I feel like I've given my power away so much. We talk about that. My girlfriends and I talk about this all the time. Like, I mean, you know, I'm sure you know with your daughters. Like, there's that amazing sense when you see your kid, when they start to drive you crazy. I love when my daughter or my son is like, can I? Like, won't let something drop. And it's annoying. But there is something really that looks very attractive about having that sense of that follow through. It's like, God, that would be amazing if that could ever, you know.
And you didn't feel that growing up or in college or?
Just because of that was just not who, like, I don't think it was anything particular to my, it was just because, yeah, like, I'm a huge people pleaser. Like, that's.
Are you really?
Oh, yeah.
Now, has that manifest itself in like this line of work? Because I would imagine, like being on Skype with Jill or like trying to please a director, it can get complicated, right?
No, it's not fun. Because you feel like you're constantly, that's what I mean. Like, I can't believe I'm like, it's taking me this damn long. And I'm still like figuring it out, but like, it just is, I'm just going to blame the Catholics for everything. But I think there is like a sense of tap dancing where you just like have to like, you just feel like you're trying to control an outcome that's impossible. No wonder I'm an actor, but like just trying to fit into what you gather that person wants from you.
Do you think you picked acting because you love the craft, but also because it is kind of your greatest challenge to go and get up in front of all those people all the time?
No, that is not difficult for me.
It's not.
Mm-mm. I feel safer when I'm acting than sometimes I do.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? But I do feel like I can be more braver. Am I behind, like through the, rooted to the like wants of somebody else? How weird.
So when are you least confident?
This is gonna sound very strange. Sometimes women can be scary.
Really?
Powerful women.
Really?
Like sometimes I feel like I just make myself small. Isn't that weird?
Well,
this is getting real like, therapy in here,
well,
guys.
But knowing that you went
Jesus Christ.
Knowing that you went to an all-Catholic girls' school.
And I have such good friends, like incredible good female friends. Like, but there is sometimes where I'm just like, make myself small. And I went to an all-girls school.
Yeah.
No, it's probably the fucking nuns.
It's the nuns. They made you feel small.
Yeah. Sister Anne Margaret.
Damn that religion.
You had a Sister Anne Margaret.
You did?
She did not look like Anne Margaret.
No? Did she sing?
No. But she was all about like recycling Kleenex, which was like
what?
No. Like so she would blow in her and then tuck it under her sleeve. And then just like take out a crusty wad and then blow in it again and tuck it under there. We were like grossed out.
That is child abuse.
Well, it's definitely like a petri dish. That was pre Purell.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of Anne Margaret's snot fingers.
Grabbing your ear.
Yes.
Okay, so let's do at least one more of these because this is fascinating. I had no idea we were going to be therapy here, but
God.
Okay, go deep, deep, deep.
This makes such dirty jokes, and I'm not going.
Your husband added this one.
I just he's like, please. I just mean like, you know, I have a girlfriend who's really close, and we always talk about how we like to like. There's people that like to die, that people. There's people that live in the deep end. There's people that live in the shallow end.
Okay.
And we would just like rather like just dive into the deep end like as soon as possible because it's like more interesting and you know. So we just like when we see each other, we just do a dive into the deep end conversationally. Like just
right.
Like I remember as a kid, like I was a late bloomer in terms of like letting go of dolls and stuff. Like I hung on to those for like a long time.
Yeah.
I remember buying a Barbie recording studio and keeping it under my bed. And it was like my secret. My mom was like, okay, like we won't tell anybody.
Under your bed at Yale?
Under my bed in the hospital when I had my first child. And then while Leonard was in the bassinet, my Barbies rocked out.
Yeah.
Some hot jams.
Mm-hmm. No, but
I just mean like that's I think why I also respond to the Jill Solo like to this kind of work is because it does feel like so that you go so deep that you can get lost. And I remember that feeling as a kid, like going so deep into like pretend world and then having my mom be like dinner and I'd be like that shake off
was, and time would have flown
yeah,
by.
Yeah, flown and... by. Childhood should breathe. Like childhood needs to breathe. And God, what did I read? I read some amazing article, and the author was saying like that he and his wife looked at their 5-year-old and were like could not remember a time that child had been awake without somebody looking at them, like right. Since they had been born, like never was by himself. And we have a really teeny house, and my kids share a room, and there's like really not a lot of space, but like you can, you know, it's starting to get like imperative, like, because that time is like when you hear that din of your kid like playing pretend, like that sound of like all the little voices, and it's like, it just makes me so happy that they're that relaxed and that like lost.
Yeah.
It's like that makes me feel like we're doing a good job somewhere. But I know you're right. It's like definitely a different. I mean, I never saw. I get home from school. I would not see my parents until dinner. Just wouldn't see them. Yeah. And then I would come home, like, and then you know, we'd have dinner and then go up and like do some homework. I really saw my parents for like half an hour a day, an hour and a half tops.
And now, as parents, we would feel guilty,
right? And they would stay at
home.
Yeah. And meanwhile, my mom's a stay-at-home mom, and I think I saw her. Probably less than what my children actually see of me, and I'm like, you know, like we're working stiffs.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that, you know, when I read Go Deep, I think, God, you get to do that for a living.
I know.
And that would be the great crime.
So do you,
right?
Though, by the way. Like, I love that you get to have these profound conversations all the time. Like, that's pretty awesome. What if you're like, well, this I wouldn't say is profound.
This is stretching a bit on the
All yeah. right, lady. This is just.
You want to know the truth? I'm sitting here going, God, maybe this is like too like
intense.
Inner kid psychology for the four of it. But I don't even care.
Like, okay, this is where we're going. This is where we're going.
That's right. But I think.
But it is a key to a creative. I mean, there is something. It's connected to like we were talking about. Like there is something about the creative life that is. Absolutely tied into you as one as a child. You can't like.
Yeah, you don't want to break that chain because it's hard to get it back. I think once you lose touch with with that side of you.
Yeah.
Right. And I think I don't know. I would imagine you know this better than me, but I think that there are actors who have lost that completely, and they're working. And then there are actors who are lucky enough to be able to be on projects where they're playing.
Like something's asked of them more than just like hit this mark and like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. And then it's not just like there is something about time, which is like another thing about why Jill is so awesome, because it does, like if childhood needs to breathe, like so does work. Like you can't, like I don't think like stuff, discovery can really happen in tension or like a duress.
Well, is it surprising to be on a job where you find out, oh, I actually have, the freedom to sort of, you know.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the hours are really much more mellow than a lot of other things I've been on.
Isn't that funny? Mm-hmm. So on the Soloway projects, you still get to have a life, but you get to explore and be creative.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that actually boiling it down to what's important and then just not doing the other stuff that takes?
Yeah, you don't waste time with like... Which is not a waste of time. There's some movies in which it's very important. The things that are valuable to this show, just maybe are not to, like, but they like we don't no, like usually we don't have to hold for like hair and makeup to come in and make you perfect before. There's no like takes. They just keep rolling. Because you don't know where the camera is. You have to be completely in it at all time, which one should be anyway.
Yeah.
For like the respect of your fellow actor.
Right, there's no going to your trailer while they do the over.
Or just like zoning out and be like, oh, it's off? Okay.
Exactly.
And then giving like half. So you, because you, and that's just, I feel like should be always the case, but because you're always in it, there isn't a lot of like ramping up for your coverage, which sometimes happens. Like sometimes like you have to like ramp up again.
Oh, right. You have to get back to that place.
Yeah.
Right, whereas
and then
with
it takes
this.
Like four or five takes and then you're like, okay, good. Now another one for safety. Now another one. Like Jeffrey Tambor said it best about this show, he's like, in a lot of like TV shows or films, you will get the coverage, the director will get what he or she needs, and then they'll say, okay, now this one will be for you. And he always says, like, that's our starting point. Like, that's our starting point.
Right. And we should explain, this one's for you, meaning once you cover it the way it's on, the director sees it with the script and everything, then let's try one. Because you may have it, right. Which I think is funny because that makes it sound like it's us versus them or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like the whole like cast crew like divide that just like just does not need to. It's like now it's yours.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, the lighting got theirs or the camera got theirs, sound got theirs. Now it's yours. When in fact, it's like, no, we're making.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's do one more of these. Gosh, it's hard. I think there's 13. And I could do them all if we had a two-hour show. But Okay, be afraid. Now, what do you learn about how do you learn from your 6-year-old daughter to be afraid? Gin or vodka? Is that gin?
I can't tell the difference anymore. Honestly, I can't taste it. It tastes like celery. It's gin. I mean, okay, how do I describe it? She doesn't try to yet. I mean, I hope this doesn't make it sound like I'm like presenting my child as like this pure, like, because she's a beautiful disaster, as they all are. She's a gorgeous mess. She's a 6-year-old girl, like.
Yeah, and it's gonna get worse.
Oh, yeah. I was like, maybe you want to brush your hair, and she was like, maybe you want to brush your hair, and I was like, you're right, maybe I do, but I might not, because I was like a mess. Oh, she's so funny. Anyway, I think that she just I just love that, like, she doesn't pretend that she's not feeling what she's feeling.
Right.
She's not going to say, like, I'm okay. Or I don't want her to. Like, I'm sure that's going to happen, but or when she was little, like, I kind of wrote this when she was much younger, but, you know, there was that purity of, like, I'm scared of the box cover of Edward Scissorhands or whatever. Like, that was a big thing in our house. Like, she saw the CD cover and that really was like a terrifying image.
Yeah.
And there's no telling a 3-year-old like what is happening, like why that's not scary and that he's actually, it's a tragic story.
Yeah.
And it's a great movie and visually she's going to dig it one day. But I just wish I could, I mean, I don't know. I just wish I had the, like, for her to be able to say, like, this scares me, and me to say, okay, this. Sometimes she can hear that, sometimes she's not, but she just takes care of herself in a way that I think, like, adults, like, however that translates, don't always take care of ourselves emotionally.
Right, like, what do we lose? What else do we mask when we start masking our fear?
Yeah.
In some ways, when we're a kid, we have it all, right?
Like, yeah.
We don't have those things that stop us in polite conversation from telling someone they have a bat in the cave or whatever, you know.
Right. But
on a deeper...
Do I have a bat in the cave?
No, you don't.
Okay. What if that was your long way
you
of telling
it in
me
like
that
5 minutes
I had a huge sugar? I was like, you waited a long time to tell me, and it was a really circuitous route.
Exactly. I've been trying to figure out a way.
It was really well done.
Thank you. And while you were talking, I was writing these note cards. That was the whole deal. Like, I have to come up with some way.
How do I get there? I'll slip in a few cards first.
No, your nose is beautifully clear.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Would it be such a terrible thing if, as adults, if we just said what we were scared of and said what we were thinking? And I just wonder what we never find out by being polite all the time or by being reserved. And what else we miss? And it becomes so much harder to have really quality friendships when you get older.
Yes.
And people sort of close into their own little bubbles. And I don't know, I think, like, it's all fear-based.
Yeah. I think, like, it's like, I'm certainly more fearful, as I think a lot of people are. Like, I used to ride horses. It's very scary for me now. Like, it's like there are certain things that I had no fear of at all. And now all of a sudden, like, I can feel caution coming into play. And I know, it's just like risk. Risk, like, it's so, perfect example, I had, like, an interaction with somebody, and I...
An interaction? Sorry.
We took a deep, deep dive. We had...
It was Nate.
It was Nate. Poor Nate, and he's so helpless, he can't even say anything.
No, he can't, because he's the sound man and the cameraman.
So awesome. Oh, God. I want you to just rip those things off and just come in here and just get to...
I shouldn't say that. If the DGA is listening, no, we have a man on every camera.
Every camera! On a woman.
Yes.
What the fuck am I talking
about? Okay, so you had an experience recently.
Yes, all right.
An interaction.
And it was an interaction. And it was like there was like something that was like missaid or that I could have like... I don't know. I thought I had pegged this person, and I just decided to jump in and ask a scary question that was just like, no. I mean, you know what I mean? Like something that, you know, I could have so easily just been like, forget it.
You went to the deep end.
And
you thought he was going with you.
And because This person totally surprised me with their response. And I was like, oh, you're so not what I thought you were. You're so off. Like, it was, anyway, you're right. We just can scare ourselves from just, like, discovery. Just, like, I think we can just kind of, I don't know, that's why, again, work is so much easier for me. But sure, well, it's hard to say it's hard to tell the truth if it's going to hurt. Like, it's hard. So, like, it's hard to make waves. It's hard to, like, and I'm like I said, like, I'm a people pleaser. And I really have not stood up for myself sometimes. Like, we all, not a, a lot of, I mean, you know, there's a hierarchy in whatever we do. But the older I get, the more I'm like, fuck it.
Really?
A little bit.
Maybe that's why you like acting so much, because
yeah,
you get to go and take all those boundaries away and play in that space, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or just, like, expectation that I think that, like, however I've defined my, or had defined myself, can just, like, I can explore. I don't know. I don't mean to say it's, like, acting to me is not an end. It's not like I'm working anything out at all in it. I don't feel that. It just feels like that open channel that I had as a kid. It's like the purest way. But honestly, it's also, you know, the older we get, like, I don't know if you feel this way, but, like, real, like, whatever intimacy is, and I don't mean, like, but is hard to achieve. Like, I feel like I can, like, have a lot of fake intimacy with, like, pals, but, like, to really, like,
yeah,
put yourself forward as a human is, like, a difficult thing. And I'm so grateful for the pals I have, and that work is, for as, like, sloppy, emotional, like, it's so such a weird business. It is, at the end of the day, like, we're a different kind of bird for sure. You know, this circus, but it is, it feels like, always feels like incredibly, like, safe. And I just make it a point in my life for, like, it not, like, not to leak through. 'Cause that's not, like, helpful to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been so blessed to witness the performances I have. I think from my perspective, like, to see it that close has been just, like, one of the things I'll hold on to forever. Like, some of the things I feel like I've seen up that close have been, like, like, you hate to talk about, like, you know, I hate, it's embarrassing to say, I'm going to try to be brave. I get embarrassed to say the word, like, art, but that is something I feel like I've gotten to see, like, up close with some of these performances, like Tambor and Jay Duplass is just doing some work on this show that's, like, another level, and Judah, everybody. So that, and a lot of different projects. Feral. Like, yeah. I just, to be able to say, like, I could just have been that close to it is also, like, a real awesome gift.
Well, I mean, God, you're working with the most amazing artists of our generation on a regular basis, and you're doing this incredible work, and you know, I will say, perhaps the highest compliment I could pay you is that I feel like talking to you, we've barely scratched the surface of what we can talk about.
I want to keep talking. I know, you're so awesome to talk with.
I feel like the hallmark of a good conversation is that, wow, there's so many other paths that can be taken and so many other things to talk about. So,
God, this was so much fun.
Oh,
I really, really, really appreciate it. This was so, so great. You are as advertised. I've had heard that it was going to be this meaningful, and I'm glad it was.
Well, that advertising budget was expensive, so I'm glad it's working.
Now put your pants on.
Now put your pants on, Nate. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. Awesome.
Hey, folks, that's our show for today. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join me next time when I sit down with actress Imogen Poots.
If you're going to start finding happiness, if you start to believe that because a film has got good reviews, it's anything to do with you, you've got to stop that security or validation through the public opinion. That's incredibly dangerous. I think it has to come from you, and you have to know what you love.
Imogen has the resume of an actress twice her age and the chops to match. Maybe that's because at only 27, she's already worked with some of the most respected directors in the business, including Peter Bogdanovich, Terrence Malick, and now Cameron Crowe in his upcoming Showtime series, Roadies. It's both unusual and inspiring to talk with someone who thrives as much on uncertainty as she does on her own instinct, and the occasional Preston Sturges movie. See you next time, off camera.